Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Oh, we got a little bit of lag.
Cool. Yeah. Hang on a second. Connection's unstable. Good to go. All right, we good?
Yeah, we're good. Well, you know, I record on this end, so we'll have something. So let's just see how it goes.
Sure. Yeah, okay. So big fan. We only have like about a half hour, huh? Is that right?
Oh, we could take an hour. I don't have anything after this, so I got a little bit of flexibility.
Sure. So I want to say I apologize. I think I accidentally intruded on your meetings earlier. So I was trying to test this thing.
When I forget to lock the room, that happens. And then poor people just come in and they're like, what's going on? There's people here. So I locked it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So, no, that's no
problem.
Well,
I am, let's see. So I was born, raised in Hayward, California. Sure. Born and raised in Hayward, California, just down the road from where you are.
Yeah.
You froze again. Let's see.
Yeah, the connections, the internet.
It's so connection. Off.
Yeah.
Let's see. My Wi-Fi is kind of cutting in and out here.
So where are you at now? Are you still in Hayward?
No. Okay. So born and raised Hayward, California. All the way up through high school, and born and raised in a Catholic family, nominally Catholic family.
And oh, hang on. Someone's at the door.
Sure.
Hi.
Can you get
past them?
Yes.
My name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Tomoko.
Hi, Tomoko.
I'm on the phone right now.
Okay, we'll just need you some information. We can get to school later.
Okay.
Inviting people to a prayer breakfast. Non-denominational.
Okay.
Main focus is blessings, like marriage blessings.
Okay.
By having strong married couples.
Okay.
Best way to bring world peace.
Okay. All right. Great. Right. Thank you. Thanks. Like, happy bride.
Do you have a bride at all?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Sorry about that. I am here all by myself. I don't have a secretary or anyone. So,
sure.
So a couple just came by to invite me to a prayer breakfast. I have no idea.
Must be nice.
Hey, some of these things you go to that you get invited to, I'm going to one tonight, but it's public radio, so I kind of know what they're doing. But, you know, random people, church, prayer breakfast, who knows what this is about. So anyway, I'm sorry. Sorry for the interruption. Yeah. that's to give you a little window into my life. So,
sure.
Hayward.
Yeah. Born and raised in Hayward. Roman Catholic family. Mother is first generation, dad is second. And so my mom's Mexican, and dad is, his family is actually from back east, but my dad's, my grandfather, he's from the Philippines, came here from through the Navy. So I grew up Catholic school from kindergarten to eighth grade. And, you know, you're familiar with the Bay Area. It's very diverse in any way you can imagine. So I was probably one of four or five kids in my, you know, 30-kid Catholic school class growing up that was not full Filipino, actually. So, you know, it was my world. And, you know, I grew up in, you know, in the Catholic faith and things like that, you know, went through the whole process, got confirmed in high school, but I was actually a punk rock kid. You know, I was a musician in high school and things like that. So although I surrounded myself with rebellious, irreligious people, I was, you know, I kind of had you know, let's split lives and things like that. And I was also an athlete in high school as well. So college, I came out to Arizona State and, you know, totally different landscape. I was really happy to be getting out of the Bay Area and kind of experiencing a different life and things like that. And I actually, I became an evangelical, okay, because through various ministry efforts and things like that, got involved in the campus ministry and things like that. And I'm actually still a part of that church, but, I don't know. So there, you know, I had a pretty dramatic conversion experience right off the bat and things like that. And everything in my life changed. It was very, you know, a lot of my life, I kind of look back to that and stuff like that. So anyways, to save a lot of the details, I went through college and things like that. I was a born-again believer, and my sophomore year of college, I took like a introduction to philosophy class and things like that. And that's when I was kind of confronted with the university and things like that, and with regard to, you know, some of this. Again, I'm a lay person, okay? I'm not a lay person, but yeah, I'm a normal guy. A lot of these topics and things like that, that was, you know, just scratching the surface. And that's from there, I was, that kind of introduced the doubt into my life and things like that, you know, ideas like atheism and stuff like that. I mean, I'm from the Bay Area, but my family's pretty conservative, things like that. It was never really I never really entertained ideas like that before, you know? So, I get, what introduced me into like the traditional apologetics and stuff like that. And so hang on a second. I think you, oh, we're good.
So yeah, we're good. It came back.
I can't hear you now, or maybe it's a lag.
It's probably lag.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Me being a newly born evangelical, of course, I run to YouTube, consult the old YouTube, and I get like the William Lane Craigs and guys like that. Okay, so those were kind of like my first resources, and obviously I had heard of C.S. Lewis and things like that growing up. I didn't know, you know, I wasn't really like what you would describe as an intellectual, but I was trying to figure all this out. Okay. And that helped me for a little while. That was fine. But after college, I kind of started to struggle with, you know, especially in the context that I was in. I go to like a non-denominational church, and you know, has a, you know, I don't know. You might be familiar with some of the, you know, you're probably familiar with a lot of that kind of stuff, but a lot of the ministers and you know, the pastor and things like that, not a ton of formal theological training and things like that. So anyways, that's, you know, that is what it is. But a lot of our context, it's, you know, evangelical. So a lot of the context is about reaching people, converting people and things like that. So when it comes to purpose and stuff like that, you tie it so much to vocation. And, you know, are you going to go into ministry? You going to go to, you know, work in the marketplace, and you got to convert people from your workplace and whatnot. So I went to work as a claim adjuster in insurance for the first 3 years at a college. And, you know, that's not the funnest job. You know, people care about their cars a lot. It was an auto. So people are yelling at you all day. You know, as soon as you get there, there's a lot of money. And I was having existential crises when I was working as a claim adjuster. So like I said earlier, I'm a musician. So I'd always played, you know, worship and in church and things like that. Even when I was going to Catholic church, I played drums and things like that for the church band. So one of my best friends, he actually lives with me. He's my roommate. He you know, I kind of look to him for a lot of that stuff because he works in politics. And anyway, you know, saving you his story, I decided one day, you know what? I'm going to work in music. Okay, so that's going to be God's missional call in my life and things like that. And from there, I started to kind of, instead of listening to, you know, I work at a desk job, or I'd worked at a desk job at the time. So that allows me to listen to, you know, podcasts and, you know, listen to YouTube videos like yourself and all these other guys. And I started filling it with kind of, you know, my time with like the more music type influences and things like that. And I found myself starting to think a little bit more liberally than I had kind of in my tight conservative box. And I would listen to, you know, Christian kind of musician podcasts and things like that. And before long, I started my, you know, entertaining doubts again, doubts about my faith and things like that. And I remember that's when I really started to kind of go down that slippery slope. I had a good buddy at the time who was working out in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I remember going to take a tour of one of the plantation houses. And I remember just looking, kind of reading some of the things in the museum kind of part of the plantation. And it was talking about how some of the, you know, cultural context that played part was that, you know, this family was very Baptist and things like that. And and I just remember looking at some of this stuff and I was like, man, that is so bizarre. Like, you know, when I actually think about this, and, you know, the doubts were really creeping, really shadowing over me pretty heavily. And this was kind of the toughest part for me. I remember my Uber driver on the ride back, you know, from my buddy's apartment at the time to the airport in Baton Rouge. You know, I try to talk to my Uber drivers whenever I have a, you know, I'm in one of those conversations and things like that. And me being an evangelical, I'd always try to offer to pray for them or something like that. And I remember he was telling me, he was, and this, I'll always remember this conversation, but he was basically a former pastor. And he, you know, I asked him some of his story, and he basically was telling me how he deconverted from his faith. He told me, you know, I asked him a little bit about his story, and me being the apologetics expert that I was at, you know, 22 years old or whatever, I was like, you know, pretty cocky about it. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to convert you back right here. Let's talk about it. And, you know, on the ride and things like that, he was beginning to tell me that, you know, you Seventh-day Adventist pastor or something like that. And I know I had learned a little bit about the Seventh-day Adventists and things like that, but he was basically preparing for his doctorate or something. And along the way, he just decided he didn't believe it anymore. And I think that really, shook me pretty hard in my faith, because I thought, well, how can this guy go anywhere near a Bible and lose his faith? You know, in my context, it's, you know, faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of God, things like that. And anyways, long story short, I almost deconverted from my faith a couple of times. I remember, you know, one of your videos, I think you were talking to a younger guy, like from Idaho or something like that. I can't remember the guy's name or entirely what the conversation was about. I think he might have been an ex-Jehovah's Witness or something, but he talks about like a night, you know, like a dramatic night where he actually completely lost his faith. And I almost had that. I remember that night pretty clearly in my story. And thankfully, I'm very fortunate. I have pastors that really care about me at the church that I go to. And I was able to call one of them, and he was able to kind of talk me out of my panic and things like that. But during this time in my life, you know, I had to kind of step out of some of the stuff I was serving in church. And what I thought would help is I started listening to some more of these, like, kind of the liberal Christian folks and things like that, and their podcasts, and Rob Bell and company, as I like to think about them. And I guess after a while, I realized, like, this isn't helping, things like that. And we sell The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller at our church. So, you know, all of us being in our young 20s, kind of going to a college age church, encourage us to read that. So I did. And I looked back, I read that years before. So I looked back and I was like, you know what? These traditional apologetic guys like the, you know, Billy Craig and Frank Turex and all them and all the sorts, they're not really helping me much anymore with where I'm at in my faith. And these liberal Christian guys are not helping me much either. Like, this just is not helping. You know, if I get rid of different doctrines, that's not really help. That's not, you know, I don't know. It's not helping
the whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I looked up, you know, Tim Keller on YouTube and things like that, and started listening to some of his sermons, thinking, okay, this guy's probably going to give me some of the same cosmological argument, you know, this and that. And I remember listening to him and I was like, huh, like, that's different. It's not helping me a ton, but I'm going to keep going from here because it, you know, it is getting me to think differently. And that, you know, eventually I started listening to Jordan Peterson because he, although he wasn't going to subscribe to kind of the same position that a Tim Keller would, again, he was getting me to think in different ways. And eventually I started listening to you because some of your, you know, a lot of your stuff was just so encouraging, stuff like that, the stories that people would share and things like that. And the way that you were able to teach, like the way you were able to incorporate some of these really important minds in the history of the faith and stuff like that. And I don't know, I really appreciate it and things like that. And a lot of, you know, a lot of your videos have really kind of helped to bring me back out of that faith rut that I was in. So
good.
I don't know. Glad I finally get to talk to you.
Well, with my sister's death and then the holidays, basically November and December got sidetracked. And so then I have family in town until the first couple of weeks of January. So I don't do too many conversations. And so we're back on track. No, I really appreciate your story. Thank you for sharing it. And I don't think your story is unique. I very much understand your story, and I very much understand it. I think Peterson is helping to answer questions that I'm not sure even he is aware he's answering. At least that's how it was for me. He kind of pointed me in some new directions that helped me begin to put some things together again. And I had worked through Keller. So Keller, I found Keller in, I'd heard about Keller actually in seminary. One of my professors, Roger Greenway, who taught at, he's a CRC guy. He was a missionary for the CRC. His son is a CRC preacher currently. Roger passed away a few years ago. He taught missions at Calvin Seminary, and he mentioned Tim Keller and shared a paper with us. And I remember this was back in the 80s, and Roger Greenway tells us 80s or very early 90s, maybe 1990, Roger Greenway said, you know, this Tim Keller guy, you're going to hear about him. And I remember that from like 1990. And then in 2006, I had an opportunity to go to New York and to spend some time with Tim Keller and some other pastors. And at that point, I wasn't really into him. And it was a few months after my trip there that some other things in my life, some very hard things were coming to a head. And I took a huge dive into Keller because I hit kind of my own existential wall. And I needed, I was, I was, I was kind of at the end of my rope in terms of ministry and emotionally and all kinds of things. And I started listening to Tim Keller 1, 2, 3, 4 hours a day. I mean, I needed that much of it. And I went through a good part of everything online I found of his. And then I started buying because his sermons, you had to pay for it. It's like, well, I start buying his sermons. I spent a lot of money buying Tim Keller sermons for a while. And I took a really deep dive into him for about 4 or 5 years and really gained a lot from it. And then after about 4 or 5 years, that was, you know, I was able to resolve some things for myself. And so then I wasn't as into Keller anymore. I'd always keep an eye on him and listen to his stuff now and then, but it wasn't as intense as it was. And then in May of 2017, I found Peterson, and I wasn't in the same kind of needy place that I was in 2006, but then in 2017, Peterson caught my attention, and I didn't quite know why. And then, so that was May. So then I really hit the videos hard from May until November, and then end of November, I made my first video. And so ever since then, it's been recorded on YouTube. So, I think your story is, and one of the things that caught my attention from about Peterson was that I had seen people go off into atheism. I'd seen people deconvert and just wander into atheism or sometimes into more New Age Eastern things. And to me, that had been a one-way street. And I got fascinated by Peterson, and I was even more fascinated by the people listening to Peterson. So Peterson fascinated me, but it was the connection between Peterson and the listeners that really fascinated me. And because I began to notice people had gone from Christianity to Sam Harris, and they were starting to turn back the other way. And I thought, I hadn't seen that before. That was kind of like a burning bush. That was like, what is that? And that's really caught my attention. And that's where I really began to take a hold of it. And so that's still what I'm working on. And so your story doesn't surprise me at all. And I, you know, every segment of the church has its strengths and its weaknesses. And evangelicalism can be really good at reaching people. But there comes a point when a lot of people need to deal with some other things, often some things of the mind, some philosophical things, some intellectual things. And a lot of evangelical apologists settle questions, but they don't necessarily give a new place in which to live with those questions productively. Now, the apologists may themselves have been able to, but your experience with apologetics, I don't think is uncommon. And I haven't found a lot of that apologetics really working well on, you know, so you see guys debating guys like Matt Dillahunty, and I don't know, it just doesn't seem to go anywhere. So for me,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think you characterize it so well. And I don't know if it was a recent video, but I was listening to, trying to catch up on a lot of stuff over the winter holidays. I went back to Oakland for the weekend. And I think you said something along the lines of like, well, when it comes to like the iron box of naturalism or the, whatever you call it, steel cage of naturalism, I mean, you know, you hear some of these traditional apologetic arguments and things like that. And when you think within that box, it's kind of like, I just don't buy it. You know, like the argument's fine, I'll follow it. But like, ultimately, I don't want to follow it to the conclusion you want to lead me to. I think you just characterized that so well, because in my experience, I even find myself in that box sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I part of the thing is, I mean, maybe because I wonder, you know, I sit here in front of my computer and I talk at it for an hour or two and I record it and I post it on YouTube and people watch it. And I'm just surprised anybody watches. And then people say, well, that was really helpful. Then I think, well, why was it helpful? What's going on here? And I'm trying to figure that out. Because, but part of it is, I mean, the things that you're wrestling with, they're the things that I'm wrestling with. And all my videos are me trying to integrate all this stuff and to wrestle with it. And so I guess it's kind of like real time. Well, here's what I'm working on. So, you know, I hope it's helpful. Here it is. It's not tied up in a bow for you, but it's messy, but that's what I got. So I'm happy to share it if it's helpful.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's, so then I look at the progressive evangelicals. So I did just the conversation I posted yesterday with Jess.
I watched that just this morning. That was so good. I resonate with that guy so much because that's like for the first, I don't know, three quarters of that video, I was like, this sounds really familiar. In fact, I think I'm about to tell Paul the same things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you two aren't the only ones. And part of it is, so I, you know, in terms of the CRC, which is Conservative Reformed Denomination, Tim Keller is PCA. That's a little bit more conservative than the CRC in that they don't ordain women to office. The CRC does. But the CRC is not affirming of same-sex marriage and some of those things. So it's on the conservative spectrum. And I was always kind of on the liberal end of the conservative spectrum. And so in some ways, I had some affinity to people like Pete Enns and a bunch of the progressive evangelicals, let's say. But the more I listened to them, the more I thought, I don't know. Okay, so you're helping some people who are living in an evangelical camp try to resolve some dissonance issues of some issues that are in the culture. Gender issues, LGBT issues, you're trying to help them resolve them. But I don't know that you're actually adding anything to the conversation. I think you're just basically saying, okay, well, we'll accommodate to this area and then we'll no longer have dissonance with the culture. And then people will come to our church. But people don't then come to their church. You know, a church starts waving a rainbow flag and says, we're affirming. It doesn't fill up. You know, folks on the left, they'll clap, they'll say, yay, good for you. But they're not about to come to your church because what are you really offering them? And well, we're offering Jesus. So then it's kind of, yeah, but, you know, and so I watch the progressive evangelicals and I'm watching them and I'm thinking, that's not really doing it either. So we have to, instead of just moving left, what we have to do is dig deeper.
What is it? So, you know, and I did watch, I watched the one you did about like, I think it was the ironies of the unbelieving church where they, it was the woman from the Church of Canada who was in.
Fred of Osper.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is the deal with that? That's a really interesting observation. And I think about that often. What, why not? You know, if you are trying to change as from, you know, from the perspective of the church, if you're trying to change to meet or to satisfy the objections of the culture, why is that not yielding results that you intended to? Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think at some point part of it is because of secularism, because so what's the difference between, let's say, Green something or other, Rebel Wisdom keeps talking with him. I forget his name, but he talks about blue church. And that's a great description. So you have blue church, let's say Democrats in America. So then the main line is kind of the Democrats, well, maybe at prayer because why pray? Democrats at liturgy. That's what the mainline church becomes. But what are they actually adding? And see, part of what I'm sure you experienced going from, okay, so you had a traditional Roman Catholic situation and then evangelicalism, and probably part of what grabbed you with evangelicalism was a taste of the living God, and Jesus was at work and you had a personal relationship and Jesus was alive in the world and you're right there in church and the music is on and the preacher is preaching and people's lives are being changed and people are giving up their drugs and people are giving up their alcohol and people are straightening out their lives. And this is, you know, and Jesus is invading and it's powerful. And that's the power of evangelicalism. And so it just kind of overwhelms. Okay. So you have that period in your life, but then other things start to creep in. Well, what about, like you said, then you go to college. It's like, and you have some smart professors and they got a lot of good arguments and a lot of their stuff makes sense. And whereas you remember the power and the passion of when you converted and all that was there, but now, you know, this intellectual life. And so then the evangelical apologists rush in and say, oh no, you know, don't worry, we can explain this, but I don't know. See, and then Jordan Peterson comes in and I still haven't quite figured out how this is all working, but Jordan Peterson comes in and kind of says, so he's coming in from, he's using Darwin against Darwin in a sense, because the Darwinians are saying there is no God because Darwin, and Peterson comes and says, well, there really is God because Darwin. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. What did he say? How does that work? What is God again? So he just kind of undermines the whole thing. And this is why Peterson is so disruptive. And this is why Peterson is just shaking up the playing field in such a dramatic way. And we don't, even Peterson, I don't think any of us know exactly what's going on, but we know something's going on and we're talking a lot to try and figure it out. That's my theory.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I've heard you bring this up in a handful of your conversations, but what is it that's, you know, Peterson does seem to do a lot better with the atheists in terms of getting them to open up the, you know, the materialist box, or at least getting them to consider it. So why, or do you have any thoughts on, I know that you've kind of like mentioned it, but like, what do you think it is?
Well, he goes back through philosophy. I mean, so if you look at his conversations with Sam Harris, four rather frustrating conversations, because Peterson keeps trying to build the argument and say, okay, Sam, this is what we know. Sam wants to say, he's looking at it from a materialist perspective and what I call a monarchical vision. Sam imagines he is seeing stuff directly. So, here's a cell phone. That's just direct. It's just me and the cell phone in an empty room. And Peterson looks at that and says, no, there's way to that. Because if you took a cell phone like this, so here's a funny thing. If I were in a room and I left my cell phone in the room and walked out, and you and I knew each other and were paying attention to each other, and I left my cell phone in there, you would see the cell phone immediately say, hey, wait, here's your cell phone. Wallet, even more. Why? Well, a cell phone and a wallet have an existence beyond just what a cell phone and a wallet does. And whereas if I had left my empty water bottle, you wouldn't think a thing of it. But if I leave my wallet or my cell phone, you say, hey, Paul, wait a minute. Don't forget this. There's value there. And this value isn't material. And so Peterson comes to Sam Harris and he says, you know what? The world isn't just a space for objects. It's a forum for action. And this is how he starts Maps of Meaning. This is what Peterson was running through in the Cold War, because he saw the Americans and the Russians. He says, you know, we're putting all of humanity at risk with nuclear annihilation over what exactly? That's a really good question. And so that's why he digs deep into Maps of Meaning. And so he comes to Sam Harris. He says, you know, Sam, the way you're pretending the world is, it isn't really like that. And we all know it isn't really like that for the same reason. If I leave a water bottle in a room, or if I leave a wallet in the room, everybody knows the difference between a water bottle and a wallet. My dog doesn't. My cat doesn't. But every human in the room knows. Why is that? There's more going on here. And you atheists over there, you're not owning up to it. And that argument is powerful, and Peterson is making it persuasively. And we don't, here's the crazy thing. We don't even know exactly how he's convincing us, but he is. And he's not even, he has a handle on something. He knows, he keeps doing, saying what he knows is working, but he probably doesn't even know exactly why it's working. And at that level, we begin to realize life is a lot stranger than we suspected it was. So you became an evangelical because boom, God invaded and God was very real. Then you go to university and God seems kind of far off. And the professors with all of their ideas and their skepticism, they're like, those are just psychological tricks. So in comes a psychologist who sits down and says, no, it's really weird. And it's really weird on a lot of levels. And actually, if we follow this materialist frame the way it's going, it leads to this identitarianism that it's destroying society. That's really weird on levels when somebody comes up and says, I think I'm a girl. And you say, no, Paul, you're 55 years old. You have a penis. You've lost your hair. You know, if you want to dress like a woman, you're going to be pretty dang ugly. And you're going to be pretty frustrated if you want to be a Victoria's Secrets model. That ain't nobody going to play that game, Paul. You're on the edge of delusion. And so Peterson's just kind of come along and saying, that's the wrong way. And we all kind of know it, but we don't know why. And so this, let's talk about this. And it's happening. And so, you know, and someone would say, why? And I'd say, God. Oh, no, you shouldn't say God. But it's that big and it's that mysterious. And see, then Christians would say, yeah, but God, and then Christians will tend to have a real nice little God, boop, 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 just kind of like four spiritual laws. And I would say, yeah, but you know what? Four spiritual laws, this is a lot longer and a lot more complicated and a lot harder to get our heads around than four spiritual laws. Nothing against four spiritual laws and nothing against, you know, my heart was strangely warmed and nothing against, you know, my eyes, I saw him and my heart was free. All that's true. But when it comes to dealing with the world, we have this strange book that just somehow keeps working for reasons we don't know why. So here we are. And here you are talking to me. So it's patently weird.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, and I'll be honest, again, I'm not as smart as I think, or as I tend to tell myself that I am, but
none of us are smart as we want to be or think we are.
Sure, sure. But you know, I can nerd out with you all day. We can talk about so many things, but okay. So, I mean, I want to talk about Calvinism for a second because I know, again, I'm in an evangelical setting and it's Arminian, at least. Yeah, for the most part, and doctrinally, it's very Arminian. And I've tried my best. I mean, I've had some, you know, Reformed thinking friends or whatever and things like that. I've kind of actually kind of grown like a very strong distaste for a lot of that stuff. But I think you kind of addressed it in like your video about John MacArthur and things like that. And you get into that, but I don't know. So I guess the thing that still kind of disturbs me a bit, you know, I'm very comfortable in my Christianity at this point, but like the deconversion thing, you know, when it comes to Calvinism, that sort of leads me to think of why, you know, God, what's the deal with that? Like this deconversion thing, you know, didn't you predetermine, this man's salvation? What did you predetermine his deconversion as well? You know, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, deconversion is more of a problem for an Arminian than a Calvinist in some ways. Well, maybe it's the other way. Maybe it should be a bigger problem for a Calvinist. There's a video on the internet with Tim Keller talking about this that I've linked to a couple of times, which I think is good. here's one way to think about it. You know, again, I reach to the Tolkien Frodo illustration of, you know, what's our relationship with God and agency? Well, is Frodo free of Tolkien? Now, if you were to ask Tolkien, Tolkien would probably say Frodo is free, but Frodo will do things that are in keeping with Frodo-ness. And this is this question about God's agency and our agency is really hard. And it's hard in some of the ways that agency is difficult in a materialist frame. So Sam Harris will have difficulty talking about agency because everything starts from the singularity at the Big Bang and it's just physics from there. Now, here's what the Bible seems to say. The Bible seems to say that we are responsible for our choices, and our choices have lasting impacts. That seems clear to us. It's also seems clear to us that we are, what we experience as choice is not that easy to understand. For example, okay, so I was raised by wonderful, loving, Christian Reformed parents. Is it a mystery that I'm Christian Reformed? Someone would say, no. You have an easier time understanding the limitations of my agency than I do. So it's not just a question of agency. It's a question of from what position do you look at the agency of another? So now we talk about God and election. And the reason we have this doctrine of election is because it's found in the Bible. And Paul says things like, you know, he chose you from the foundations of the earth. And the Gospels say things about Judas, which are, you know, absolutely breathtaking in terms of, you know, Judas was destined for destruction. And it's like, you know, does that mean Judas couldn't choose otherwise? But then there's Peter. And Peter, on one hand, in one breath, Jesus says, who do people say that I am? And Jesus says, and Peter says, you know, you're the Christ. You're the Son of God. And Jesus says, you couldn't have said that unless God had revealed it to you. And a little while later in the conversation, Jesus says, oh, by the way, we're going to Jerusalem. I'm going to be turned over to the hands of Gentiles, and I'm going to be killed. And Peter says, I'll never let that happen. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, he was the rock a minute ago, and now he's Satan. And so then you get to have Peter and Judas, and you say, well, Peter denies Jesus, and then Jesus restores him. Judas betrays Jesus and goes out and hangs himself. What's with that? So here's a question. Could Sauron in Lord of the Rings, could he be rehabilitated? Let's rehabilitate Sauron. I don't know. Maybe it's not in keeping with what Sauron is. So then the question is, well, what are we? Now, and see, I'm not convinced our language finally can actually illuminate all of this. And there's a tale about St. Augustine. If you really want to look at where election and these ideas come from, they come from Augustine. And so they're all within Roman Catholicism too. But they come from Augustine, and there's a probably apocryphal, maybe it's a true story, of some young man comes to Augustine once, and he says to him, I think I'm reprobate. I think I'm condemned for all eternity. I don't think I'm an elect. And Augustine says, well, go to a church and get elect. And I think that's kind of the way we have to approach it. With deconversion, people deconvert. And when that happens, we're like, I remember as a child, I used to think, because I'd see people who would leave the church, and my child, you know, they'd leave the CRC, they'd go be a Baptist, like, they're a Baptist now. That's kind of how the CRC was. It's like being a Roman Catholic, and they become a Protestant. It's like, oh no, they're a Protestant now. They've left. And okay. But, you know, and then I said, why, Lord, why do you let us change our minds? And God didn't answer me at that point, but I think if I were to ask him, he'd say, oh, do you not want to have agency? Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what makes being human human. So I don't know that we can answer these questions, but I do know that election is biblical. I can't paint the whole picture, but it does seem to me that this idea that I'm just sitting here choosing my destiny, I don't think it's quite that simple.
Well, I've heard you say this in another video, and this is just off the top of my head here, but, you know, I mean, when we talk about Jordan Peterson, we talk about the, you know, his atheist conversations and things like that, and you know, a lot of the times you'll say, well, not you, but he will say, well, look, you clearly don't live like an atheist. You live as if there's some metaphysical principles governing your life, okay? You clearly don't live that way, so why are you calling yourself that? So the same way, I mean, I've heard you say this, and, you know, it's like, well, we can't really live as if we don't have any freedom. Why are we, you know, why are we calling ourselves Calvinists? Why are we calling ourselves Reformed? I don't know. Yeah. I know those are kind of, there's a lot of conversations that go into these titles we place on ourselves within the Christian camp, but I don't know.
Tim Keller has a really nice way of phrasing this. And there's a couple of sermons you can find where he talks about this. But he says, on one hand, when you get out of bed in the morning, if you actually believed that the tiniest decision you made was going to be consequential for the rest of your life, to the degree that we know it is, you'd be paralyzed and you'd never get out of bed in the morning. So on one hand, we need to know that, well, you know, I might be choosing my steps, but God is governing my path. As a Christian, we kind of know that. At the same time, if we thought that, well, I don't actually have to exhibit any agency, then we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning either because, well, I'm just waiting for God to get up and dress me and bathe me and feed me. And, you know, nobody lives like that either. So,
sure.
And so it's this weird, in my opinion, both and that Augustine story illuminates that we can't really, here's the thing for me that, if I have to finally choose between my ability to hold on to God or God's ability to hold on to me, I'm going to trust in God and not me because God's way stronger than me. And that's finally why I continue on as a Calvinist because I think I knew a guy in my church who had a stroke and all... He had a stroke, and so then all he could say, he couldn't really talk after that. About the only thing he could do was cuss. And so if he'd get excited, he'd just say, bullshit, 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 bullshit. And then his wife's like, well, I can't take him to church, because if I wheel him into church, he's going to go into church, he's going to say, bullshit, 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 bullshit. I said, come, take him to church. You know, just because he says bullshit, bullshit, bullshit all day long doesn't mean we're going to kick him out. He had a stroke. And I've seen people have dementia and lose all kinds of things. And so, well, what does that mean? When they lose dementia and they start doing crazy, unchristian things, does that mean they lost their faith? No. It's God holds us. We don't hold on to him. And, you know, if I'm a little kid and I'm with my parent and let's say I grew up on the Jersey coast. If I'm going to the ocean with my father and I'm 4 years old and my father's my size, 6'4", over 200 pounds, and we're walking into the ocean together, what's more important, the four-year-old's ability to grip onto daddy or daddy's grip on him? I choose daddy. That's why I'm a Calvinist. That's how I see it.
Sure. Now, I caught bits and pieces of the last 20 seconds. The internet's really not helping me out here today. No. But, you know, I understand that really well. And I feel like I have a good idea of how to kind of balance the thoughts and things like that there. I wouldn't subscribe to Calvinism and things like that. Mostly it's just because – and I think you articulate this so well, but I've really just – become well, okay, so help me again to understand. I know that you talked about this, like the differences between, okay, so Keller, Reformed and Calvinist and things like that, but he's not the same denomination as you. And again, like MacArthur, Piper, all these guys, all the popular YouTube theologians and things like that in America. So what is the difference? Is it mainly a denominational difference with CRC, or is there actual theological differences? Can you help me understand that?
Not a lot of theological differences in terms of the... So really the difference is between the Dutch and the English. So I'm part of the Dutch Calvinist tradition, and they're part of the English Presbyterian tradition. So we have the Belgic Confession and the Heidelberg Catechism. They have the Westminster Standards. So theologically, they're very close cousins. Temperamentally, the Dutch tend to be a little bit looser, a little bit more tolerant. The English tend to be a little bit tighter. Also, a number of those people, not Keller, like John Piper and John MacArthur, they're Reformed Baptists. And so they kind of go off in a different strain. They're English nonconformists. And so the PCA, so the PCA is a split off of the PCUSA. The PCUSA was the large main Presbyterian church. In the modernist fundamentalist split, they split up, and the PCA went a different way. And so it's part of the PCA's tradition to oppose women in office. The CRC opened the door to women in office, so that's a difference between the PCA and the CRC. But in terms of the Calvinist doctrines, that's pretty much the same. But so here's a weird thing about the Dutch. A lot of people say, drugs are legal in the Netherlands, and they kind of are, but they're also kind of not. The Dutch have this tradition of a little bit of weird tolerance that the Presbyterians don't look at. So the Presbyterians tend to be tighter. The Dutch tend to be a little bit more flexible. That's really kind of the difference. But Keller uses a lot of Dutch CRC people like Alvin Plantinga and Nick Waltersdorf and then some of the old Dutchmen, Abraham Kuyper and Herman Bavinck, some of our neo-Calvinist lights from the 19th century. So Keller has taken a lot from us. And actually, when I met Keller, he said, yeah, you CRC folks, I use your stuff all the time. And, you know, you guys don't seem to be using your stuff to the good effect that we are. So thanks for the stuff, but, you know, you should pick up your game. So, but hey, there's not a lot of Tim Kellers around.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So how'd you wind up in Sacramento?
Well, I was a missionary in the Dominican Republic, and then we came back to the States. And so then at some point I started looking for a church, and I had in the CRC, there's no bishops. And so pastors are kind of free agents within the denominational fold. And I had a job offer. I'll say
drafted by the Sacramento.
What's that?
You got drafted by Sacramento?
I got drafted by Sacramento. I had a job offer in Chicago and a job offer in Sacramento. And so I came to Sacramento. So that was about 21 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I'm asking because that's sort of in the neighborhood where I grew up and things like that. And man, I still look back, and I'm young, but I still look back at the first 17 years of my life. And I think, man, that was like another world out there. It was...
And it keeps changing. I mean, Hayward's changed a lot in 17 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a rough upbringing for sure.
Yeah. I have a church. We have a CRC church in Hayward, and I have good friends that pastor there and minister there. And it's an interesting place. So, and actually we had a Filipino congregation in Hayward that merged in with the other congregation. So I know a little bit about Hayward. I get out there now and then.
Really? Okay. Cool. Well, yeah, and I know we don't have much more time, but I think the last thing that I wanted to ask you about was maybe N.T. Wright. I know that you're friendly with N.T. Wright and things like that. And that was a guy that for some reason the kind of progressive, you know, ex-evangelicals and things like that, they seem to be friendly with him too. And I don't know why. Be honest, because from my evangelical perspective, I think, well, what about this is attractive to, you know, what you're selling here? I don't know. So can you help me understand him in a Spark Notes kind of way, like you tend to do?
Well, Wright,
Well, Wright is, on one hand, just an off-the-hook, amazing, historical New Testament scholar. And so he, I mean, gosh, if you would go to Amazon and look at all the books he's written, you wouldn't have enough time in your life to read them. I mean, you wonder, how on earth has this guy written all this stuff? So he's an amazing biblical scholar. He kind of straddles the line between the progressive evangelicals and the conservative evangelicals, partially because in terms of boundary marker things, he's not affirming of same-sex marriage. He is open to women in office. So in that sense, in terms of the CRC, he fits the CRC right there. And see now, so progressive evangelicals, the CRC is kind of on the fence. If you're PCA, you don't like N.T. Wright's openness to women in office. If you're Episcopalian, you're uncomfortable with N.T. Wright's non-openness to affirming same-sex relationships. So N.T. Wright kind of fits exactly in the same space as the CRC. And so he's open enough so that the progressive evangelicals can benefit from his scholarship, but he's conservative enough that most conservatives will look at him and say, yeah, he's soft on women in office, but he's down for the bodily resurrection of Jesus, and he makes powerful arguments there. So that's kind of where he fits in the landscape. He kind of, see, that's why he and I, because I'm affirming of, and I'm going to get it in the comment section if we post this, but I'm affirming of women in office, and or at least I'm not opposed to closing women office to women, but, and so I'm kind of right in that moderate space like N.T. Wright. But he's just a terrific New Testament scholar, and he's also, Wright is not only a scholar, but he's also a good teacher and a churchman. You can go onto YouTube and find N.T. Wright with a guitar leading singing. I mean, he's that yeah. humble of a guy, yet he's a crazy brilliant New Testament scholar, and he writes so much. So he's, if you get too far left, they won't like him because he affirms the bodily resurrection of Jesus. And so a lot of progressive evangelicals, they'll affirm the bodily resurrection of Jesus, but see, so you kind of, if you kind of see it as a spectrum, at least if you're using boundary markers like some of these culture issues, it makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's kind of one of the big projects that for N.T. Wright that I thought was interesting, that, you know, I bothered to listen to, was stuff on, and I'm blanking on the term here, but, you know, having to do with, yeah, bodily resurrection. I think it's soteriology. Sorry. I blanked on that. Soteriology and things like that, the idea of new heavens and new earth. It's not an idea, obviously, it's a doctrine, but for us evangelicals, it's all about, and this is one of the things that I still struggle with, and I'm sure the way you're shaking your head, I know that you know what I'm about to say, but it's about, making sure someone, you know, life is about evangelism if you're already a Christian. You know, life is about evangelism and ensuring that as many people as possible hear the gospel so that they don't go to hell when they die. And, you know, you've taught me a lot about that way of thinking and things like that. And it's got sort of this Gnostic kind of tendency. N.T. Wright, I want to read more N.T. Wright when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Let me recommend a book that will help.
My quote is long, so I can still hear you, but I got to find the book, and my N.T. Wright section is over here. And actually, I've been, ever since April last year, I've been trying to get N.T. Wright and Jordan Peterson to talk to one another, and N.T. Wright is available and interesting, and yeah. Jordan Peterson is interested. This book, Surprised by Hope, I'd say try this one from N.T. Wright, because I think this is one of my favorite books of his. His new biography of Paul is really good too, but this one lays out heaven, the resurrection, and the mission of the church. And I think this one would probably help, because you're right. Evangelicals are like, we'll get people to heaven.
And N.T. Wright's like, yeah, but that's not, that's what, let me tinker that with that language. The goal is actually reconciliation with God and unification of heaven and earth. That's the biblical frame. Now, going to heaven, that's kind of a code talk, and it's not wrong, but unless you understand what heaven is. So this would be the book I'd recommend of N.T. Wright's on that. Surprised by Hope.
Perfect.
And it's a delightful book. And he walks through a bunch of the issues and church fathers. And so N.T. Wright kind of has two layers of books. There's like his academic books, and then there's more of his, I usually call them middle brow books. You don't have to know Greek to appreciate it. I'll say it that way.
Sure. You do a lot of reading, huh?
Yeah, not as much as I used to. Now I'm making videos, and it's cut into my reading time. So
sure.
That's just the way it goes.
Yeah. All right. So I'm taking a note of that book here. I'm trying to come up with a reading list, and I have some stuff I probably shouldn't have on here, like, you know, Resurrection of the Son of God. I probably
that's a big one.
Yeah,
it's a good one, but it's a big one. That's the thing. Those are his. I mean, depending on how fast you read. So Tim Keller had cancer on his thyroid, and he. Mm-hmm. He was reading that book when he was recuperating from it and talked a lot about it, because he said it wasn't until he read that book that he really, you know, for him, that really helped him understand the resurrection. And actually for me, this whole journey into Jordan Petersonism has been really helpful for me to understand the necessity of the physical resurrection in terms of the ultimate reality is all of the levels. You know, you can take a psychedelic and have this experience of, you know, but your body's sitting there. Mm-hmm. That's not all the levels. And if you prioritize some little mystical experience you have over the reality of your body, well, your universe is still split. And what the Bible is about is it's about the reconciliation of heaven and earth. Another good book. Today's book recommendation day. I just did a video with Job, and I was recommending books for him.
Sure.
Another good book is one I read a few years ago by a guy. I'll share the screen here so you can see the book.
Sure.
Here it is. A guy named Joshua Ryan Butler, Skeletons in God's Closet, The Mercy of Hell, The Surprise of Judgment, and The Hope of Holy War. And it's about hell and judgment and, you know, a bunch of difficult questions that people struggle with. And he really shows how reframing the Bible as not so much a choice between heaven and hell to the reconciliation of heaven and earth really helps make these issues not what they are for a secular audience. And I read this book, 4 years ago, maybe, but it was really a good book. I like Joshua Ryan Butler. He's a pastor up in Portland, I think. I've never met him or talked to him, but I really appreciated that book. So it's good stuff.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I wish I had hours. Maybe I'll have to bug you about this again. I just have a ton of questions, and you seem to have worked through these at some point in my life because you were my age once.
I was.
So, but
well, we can talk again sometime. So just keep a list of your questions, and hopefully my list won't get. You know, people are always like, you know, oh, you're going to have 1 million subs. And it's like, careful what you wish for. If I had 1 million subs, I couldn't have conversations like these. That's what's so rewarding about this. So I actually feel bad for Jordan Peterson, because you get that mob following you and you can't do anything. So if you just have a little mob, well, then you can still have fun conversations. That's cool.
Right. Yeah, and I really appreciate that you make yourself available to people in Tempe, Arizona, like me. So,
are you in Tempe, Arizona?
Tempe, Arizona. Yeah. So when I came out to Arizona State, I stayed out here. I liked it better than the Bay Area, and you know, mainly because of the conservative upbringing I had. You know, my house was conservative. The world outside of my house was not. So, I'll be honest, but, you know, it's definitely more comfortable to live here culturally, and it's damn expensive to live in the Bay Area too. I just,
oh yeah, it is.
Not a mom and dad's house. If I
yeah. Well, I'll tell you, so. I'm going to point one more thing to you. In Tucson, which isn't too far from you, I get out to Arizona. I like to go to Arizona in the summers because I can get hotels dirt cheap because nobody wants to be in Arizona in the summer.
No.
And yeah, there's a good friend of mine. Let me pull up a picture of him. Yeah, here's a picture. So let me share the screen. My wife will kill me, but so what? So that's really dangerous. My wife will kill me, but so what? You say that as a married man? So this guy right here, his name is Rod Hugan, and he's the pastor of a church called the Village Church, and that's in Tucson. So if you're ever in Tucson for a Sunday, look up. It's the name of their website is villagersonline.com, and they're the Village Church. And let's see, where's There's Rob. They built the church to be like a big. Now, if you think I'm big, Rod's like I'm only 6'4". Rod's like 6'7", 6'8". So he is a giant. And they built the church to be kind of like a large house. And so they have a big kitchen and they do a meal together. And it's just a wonderful church. And Rod, so Rod makes me look small. And
you know, I figured you were a tall dude, but I, you know, I can always see the top, the top half when I do the videos. So
yeah,
you're a tall dude. You're what? Are you 6'5" or?
I'm 6'4", 6'5". So, but Rod's even bigger. And this is Russ, another guy from the Village, and Mike. And so if you're ever in Tucson, look these guys up because they're really cool. And their church is really cool. And I know it's not for everyone, but so my friend Rod and his buddy Russ planted that church. So it's not technically, let's see, I got a whole bunch of these pictures from when I was there. But that was, so if you're ever in Tucson, check them out and say hi and tell them I sent you. Cause if they know I sent you, they'll welcome everybody. So yeah. Anybody else, if we do post this, anybody else hears this, you know, go visit my friend Rodney. You won't regret it. So sure. I want to do a video with Rod one of these days.
I'm never in Tucson.
You're never in Tucson?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, cool. No, I'm pretty much never in Tucson. I went down there once, maybe 5 years ago, but that's a U of A territory, and I don't know, Tempe, Arizona. I tend to kind of stay at the top half of this state. I don't know.
Well, if you do get down to Tucson, go down to the Village. I think they meet like on Sunday afternoon and say hi to my friend Rod because it's a cool place. It's a cool place. Well, it was great talking to you, Christian.
And, you know, I
go ahead. No, I'll send this video to you. Get the lag.
I apologize. This lag is really hurting our dialogue here. I promise I'm not that interruptive. But I was going to say, you know, I fly back to the Bay Area all the time. So maybe, you know, maybe one of these weekends the football season's over, but me and my dad were, you know, big time Oakland Raider fans. So we go out there and I don't really have a church that I go to back in the Bay Area. So maybe I'll make the drive to Sacramento and come hang out with you. You know, I heard that you buy free lunches for the first time.
I do.
First time discount.
I do. And we often do meetups. One of the usual times for our meetups is Sunday afternoon. So if you're here on a week where we have the meetup, then you get two for one. Then you can see Living Stones and then you can come to a Sacramento meetup because some really cool guys there who are Jordan Peterson. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll have to make the drive up the park.
All right. I will send you this video, and then we can decide what we want to do with it, okay?
Sure. I appreciate the time, Paul.
Take care, Christian. Good talking to you. Okay. Bye-bye.